and I was thinking, and it occurred to me, this exam which the credit students are taking, did I tell you that it was going to be objective?
No, you didn't tell us.
It was going to be objectionable.
Objectionable, I knew that. I don't know if I did or not. I'll just tell you now, it is part objective and part subjective. And if I misled you by telling you it was going to be all objective, I would give you a chance to take a note next week if you wanted to. That's not fair. But, y'all tell me, did I say that? I don't.
You did.
I did.
Yeah.
Hey! I was talking to Ray, and it occurred to me that I had said that. Then it just sort of struck me that I made the test out in this boat. Would you all prefer to take it next week?
Yes.
I know that you study differently from an objective as opposed to a subject. Okay, I'll do this. Yes. Anybody? By subjective, I mean short essays. By object, I mean everything else. Objective means true and false, fill in the blank, definitions, identifications, that kind of thing. That subjective means essays. Now, I'm serious. I know that it wouldn't be fair to you to test you with the test that is part subjective, significant part subjective. If I told you objective, you'd be prepared to that. Yes.
Could you be a little more specific on how much?
No. But I thank you for asking. Let me ask you, how many of the credit students would, because, like I said, it's not really, I'm going to be fair to you, would you prefer to take it next week? Oh, this make a difference to me. Okay, that's the majority. It just occurred to me. It's a good thing I thought of it. I'd have heard howl. If I'd have handed you that test, you'd have howled. Made me feel bad. I'd have probably felt bad for, say, 3-4 minutes.
Are you going on a lot of dates?
Okay, so I'll give you another week. Okay, we'll take it next week. Also, I had some second thought. This is the banquet. This is the banquet night. I know some of you were working on the banquet and going. So but mainly because I think I might have misled you. That's right. We'll take the exam next week. Okay. Now.
Excuse me.
Yes.
It's not going to cover any more
information. No, it'll be up. It will not cover Christian Science. It'll be up through the Unification Church. Okay. It doesn't make a difference to me whether you take it this week or next week, and that way it could be give you a chance to.
Are we still dismissing class early?
The guy who asked that came 10 minutes late. Got your girl waiting?
Well, that's never a problem.
Well, I figured I'd go a few minutes over. Listen, Mickey. How long it takes. The girls are going after you.
Guys dress like this.
Okay, enough foolishness. Let's get back to some more foolishness. I find it very, of all the cults, I find it very hard to take Christian Science very seriously. Mary Baker Eddy was mentally ill, no question about it. She was probably, she may have been demon possessed, I doubt it. I think she was probably demon obsessed or something. But she was spooky anyway. She did have, the thing of it, I don't mean to be facetious, the thing that leads me to say that demons might have been directly involved is that she did have a way of dominating people when she was around them. You got to understand, how could she have so many followers, devout followers, when she was so weird? You know, a woman who wouldn't raise her own kid and had to be rocked in a big bed. And, it's pretty hard to take
pretty hard to take a person like that seriously. But she had a certain charisma, and she had a way of dominating people, even when she was younger. Remember, she could get people to serve. She always ended up being the head of the master of any situation she was in. People would serve her. It was sort of a fascination.
Jim Jones?
Yeah. It's kind of like Jim Jones that they would, he was demon possessed, that's pretty clearly. I've got a tape of him. You can hear the demons speak almost. I'm going to play that for you. I still forgot it. But there was something, see, she had a background in the occult, and as did Mr. Eddie, but she had this way of sort of controlling people when she was around them. It was really hard to explain. Because you just look at the data, you look at the facts, and you say, how in the world could anybody look, you know, take her seriously at all? But if you've been around her, you see, certain people are like that. I know we had a fellow in church once, and it had nothing to do with the occult or anything. And he was the kind of very, and some of you preachers may have run into somebody like this, that he was absolutely winsome. And he could pull every dirty trick in the book, and you could tell somebody about it. And he would meet that person, and in 5 minutes, they wouldn't believe a word you said. They just simply would believe this fellow. I only had 2 full-time ministries. My first full-time ministry was just like, he had a man. I think he had some mental problems. But he was downright, he was hypocritical, if nothing else, dishonest. I caught him in several lies myself. When I went there, he was sort of running the church. When I left, he wasn't even nominated for the eldership. People finally, you know, caught on to him. But anytime people, and I didn't know him, but immediately, I mean, he just win them over just in a few minutes. It's amazing. And Mary Baker Eddy was kind of like that. Meet somebody like that? And she was kind of like that. Now, how much the demons were involved, I do not know. But it was kind of weird. I bet you were sitting there thinking like that. Well, how could she have a following about it, you know, live like that? We look at distinctive doctrines of Christian Science. In the Christian Science Church, there are no ministers, unlike Mormonism and Jehovah's Witness. There's no paid clergy. It conducts no weddings or funerals. Of course, a funeral kind of goes against their idea anyway. Talk about that. But it's very secretive about its inner business. That is, its services aren't secret, but their financial operations, everything, very secretive. But interesting, when Christian Science people get sick, I mean die, they have to be funeral somewhere else, usually in funeral homes. Members are required to spurn secular medicine, even the taking of aspirin. The few exceptions are immunization, the setting of broken bones, obstetrical care at childbirth. But the last, obstetrical care, is permitted only because to comply with state laws. Now you see, the Armstrong House got in trouble because they wouldn't even allow immunizations and several of their children died. Yes.
Interesting. Martin talks about that she was on morphine all her life.
Yes, that's right. She, at least that's pretty well established, that she was a dope addict. Yeah, I'm glad you reminded me of that. I forgot that. Yes.
You said they did
performing
events, they just have civil ceremonies
instead? No, they have big events in other churches or civil ceremonies. Ailing members, somebody gets sick, here's how they're treated. They read selected passages from Science and Health. And we'll talk about what the kind of thoughts they think in a minute. A practitioner who rarely visits the sick person stays home and thinks about him, prays for him during the day, charges him $2 to $15 a day. By the way, in the Christian Science, everything is done for money. Mary Baker had established that pattern. There's a charge for everything. Now, let's say a word about that. In our churches, we don't normally think that way. We pay a preacher for a funeral and for a wedding. Part of the time, most of the time anyway, and that's about it. We don't realize that in denominational churches, especially high churches, high liturgical churches, there's a fee for everything. You realize in some churches, especially in the East, you pay a fee, and then you just reserves a pew for you. Nobody else can sit in that pew all the time that you. I never will forget when I was a young man, converted this fellow who had been raised Lutheran church all his life, and baptized him. And we, the dressing room, he asked, well, how much do I owe you? No, talking about life, I had a fellow, that's the way he was raised, you know, and he paid a fee for everything. And, that's special on that week. And when I explained to him that no, I didn't operate that way, you know, it wasn't he was very surprised, couldn't believe it. And that kind of brought home to me that, you know, I didn't realize. Well, in Christian Science, it's worse than that. You with me? Everything is paid for. The Christian Science Church has about 33 rest homes where the old and the infirm can be made comfortable while treatment of prayer. It's the person's to pray, read the Bible, read this book, Science and Health, and then their practitioner, who's supposed to be more advanced in the art of Christian Science, they pray for them and think about them and transfer this mental energy to them and help them get their mind squared away. Did you ever read the Christian Science Monitor? It's excellent newspaper. Now, that is, by the way, it's won five Pulitzer Prizes. Five. Now, I never subscribed to it, but I've always thought about doing it. I never got around to it. The news reporting is very accurate, very good. Now, of course, you read over it, you don't pay attention to the doctrinal stuff that's in it, which isn't very much. But it's one of the best news, just if you want to get the news, what's going on, it's one of the best newspapers in the country. Professor Bourne, I think, used to take the Christian Science Monitor head for years. Many preachers do. I recommend it. I'm serious. It's pretty expensive. But it's an excellent newspaper. A lot of good stuff. Not strange it would be, but it is. Christian Science is basic metaphysical dualism. Let me come back to that. The Bible, in regard to the Bible, Christian Science affirms the Bible contains errors, but this book is inerrant. For instance, Mary Baker Eddy said that the Old Testament, the Genesis teaching that God created the material world is ridiculous. That's not true at all. Neither Satan nor sin exist. I'll come back to that. I didn't want to talk about dualism. The Christ, what she says about Jesus is that the Christness about Jesus was his Christian Science. That is, he had this knowledge that she had. He had the same revelation that she had, kind of like Sun Moon, you know, as the next Christ. And that was what was the Christ about him. Otherwise, he was just a man, like she was. So she presented herself as the female Christ. That is, she was in the female what Christ was in the male. Because, are you with me? Christ means this Christian Science, this knowledge. It's very pantheistic. Every human being is just as much a part of God as Messiah. Even Jesus made mistakes, she says. You know what pantheism, that God kind of impersonally indwells all of the world. She denied the doctrine of atonement. Why? Because you cannot atone for sin because sin doesn't really exist. And since Jesus didn't really die, he did not rise from the dead. Other than that, it's Christian. I told you before, you know, it's not Christian or science. Where did this teaching come from? I've already mentioned Quimby and Lieber. And I give you a short statement about that there in the syllabus. She copied it. You can really tell because this book is fairly well written. In the literary sense, it was written by somebody with certain literary skills. And it doesn't make a lot of sense. My standard recommendation is you can sit down with Science and Health and start reading it. I've done it. And just try to read through it. And if it starts making sense to you, quit reading immediately because you're way ahead of her. But it really is. You just sit down and read it. It's very confusing. Mystical. But now, her other writing, remember I said she retired into Pleasant View, spent her later years writing. Stuff that she wrote, clearly wrote, is very crude, very poorly written. It's very clear that the person who wrote that stuff did not write this book. Because she was not well educated. She just was not a good student, didn't have good grammar, didn't have a very good vocabulary. So what she did write was very crude. Well, this is fairly well written, in the literary sense. Now, let me talk about Christian Science. And students who've had me before are going to recognize this as old Platonic dualism, which is as effective has been with which traditional Orthodox theology is infected through Augustine and Calvin and Luther and others. But metaphysical dualism. Okay, ready to go? You've had it easy so far, kind of entertained you. It's always entertaining to talk about Mary Baker Eddy, one of my favorite people. But now break it down to where we're going to think for the next few minutes. Y'all hot?
Yeah.
Let me open. Metaphysical, it is metaphysical dualism. Now, what the word dualism means, what's the word dual mean? Two. And what a dualism is, any kind of metaphysical means having to do with the basic nature or character of reality, of things. Got that? Metaphysical, okay. Now, metaphysical dualism is the idea. Well, metaphysical dualism, I'm not speaking of its source, it's demonic in its source really, but it is, what it tries to do is to explain the presence of evil in a world created by a God who is supposed to be good. That's the basic problem. Why is there evil in a world created by God and overseen by God, who is a good God? Of course, we know the Christian answer to that. The way dualism says that there's not one world, but there are eternally, that is, there are eternally two worlds. There is the physical world, and there is the non-physical world. And they are eternally and intrinsically, essentially, separated. Hence the term dualism. They never meet, as it were. Not really. They are two separate entities. And eternally so. Now learn this. Dualism is a basic approach. There are many versions of it. I'm going to mention some of it in the process of what I'm going to teach you now. But there are other versions of it. I mean, this is basic. There are many expressions or versions of it. And this non-physical world in basic dualism is the world that's good, and this world here is evil. This is the world of reason. This is a world of not of quote knowledge, but this knowledge is non-rational, non-rational knowledge. Intuitional knowledge or transcendent knowledge. We'll talk about those terms later, perhaps. Okay. Now, another key thing about this dualism, is that this world is basically, this is the real world. This world is either a reflection or an illusion. Now it depends on which version of dualism you're talking about. Either a reflection or an illusion. Now, this dualism, for instance, this is Buddhism. You recognize it? This is Buddhism. In Buddhism, I'll extend this line over here, and I'm not teaching, of course, in Buddhism, You start out in this world, and then you're incarnated into this world, and you start the wheel of life, a series of reincarnations, and depending on the quality of your life, you go round and around. Ideally, you will keep going until
eventually you arrive here. Now, if you're really rotten, you go the other way. You go from being a man to a worm. But if you're good, then you get to be, you go from like being a slug, a toad, up to a dog, to a cow, which is pretty sacred. And that's Hinduism, that's Hinduism. Buddhism broke off from Hinduism, by the way. This is Hinduism, too. Basic dualism of it. And so, now a Brahma, and then if you keep living good, you get to be a man, and then you get to be a higher class of man. You heard the caste system in India, or in Burma. So that, and the highest caste of man is a Brahmin. And a Brahmin, eventually, if you begin to live super, like some of the Buddhist monks, then you escape the physical altogether, and you're lost in this impersonality godness, and nirvana. You got that? You escape the physical altogether. Now you keep going up, for a while you're purely physical, then you get into the spiritual, non-physical realm, and then you, ideally, if you're ever going to read a good account of this, read, you enjoy, if you want to get a good insight into this without working too hard, read Rudyard Kipling's short story called Kim. It's a television special made of the last year. Kim, the old Buddhist monk, and you be friends in the process, this whole, you explain all the things. You'll get a little bit chill, read the full story. Now, this is Hinduism. This is Zoroastrianism. This is Zoroastrianism. This is Manichaeism. This is Zoroastrian Buddhism. It is Christian Science. It is, and these ideas have come into Christian theology. It is Platonism. Plato. Philosophic dualism. Okay? Now, the way this works is that salvation in a dualistic system, salvation, using it as a general term, not in a Christian sense, but whatever it is, salvation equals escaping this world and getting into this world. You see this? Over here, Buddhism. So you keep circling and circling until finally you're reincarnated. You don't get reincarnated in a physical body at all. So you're safe from this world. By the way, this is also transcendental meditation, which is Hinduism. How do you transcend? Well, you transcend by meditation, purely self-hypnosis, until you float free of the body. Same thing. Now, in this, for instance, in Plato's, remember, in Plato's Republic, he gets into this, and his the idea of the Republic is a perfect communist society in which the philosophers are the kings. And he's talking about, in the section in which he talks about the training of the philosophers, kind of thinking philosopher kings run this perfect republic, which is not quite an ideal. He explains that in the kind of basic thinking they would do, the famous allegory of the cave, or Plato's allegory of the cave. But he says all the way out, it's like a man who's born in a cave, and he's tied to something. So he's tied to something, he can never see.